This is the Visual Developers Podcast with your hosts, Lacey Kessler, Matt Varghese, and Ben Parker. Interviews, no-code reviews, tutorials, and more, we're here to talk about all things no-code.
Hi, everybody. Ben here with Visual Dev FM, back for another episode. And we're here this week with an interview with Tara Reed, which is awesome, and I can't wait for you to hear it. Lacey, and Matt, were you in on this one too, or was it just Lacey? I can never remember.
Yeah, I was in. Lacey led the interview, though, because she's got way better questions than I ever will. So, but yes, I was there, and it was a great interview to be a part of.
Yeah, sad I missed out, but awesome that we got to talk to her on the podcast. I think everyone's going to love what she has to say and enjoy the conversation. But before we get there, as always, we're going to jump into our no-code roundup with what's new in no-code. So let's get started. First up, KP. This is KP on Twitter. Link in show description. If you've never found him on Twitter, has been working on starting this company called Cuppa, and it's at GitCuppa.io on Twitter, and it's a product that's built to provide you with the chance to have one-on-ones with people from Twitter. We've talked about this on this podcast about how incredible a networking tool Twitter really is. I think we talked about it on Marco's episode even about, you know, how so many connections that we make on Twitter end up really being game changers. And I think this seems to be a cool way to really try to get that face-to-face time, maybe with somebody who you just know through tweets or 280 characters at a time.
Yeah, I think Twitter has completely changed my career. I think I credit a few things to my career. Like people have mixed feelings on Gary Vee, but I love Gary Vee. Credit that guy to the career I have today. But like also Twitter cold DMs can work, and Twitter, just like getting to know people on Twitter and like building a relationship, totally possible through the web. And so I like seeing ideas like this where you can actually connect and engage with people and just like build a relationship. I love the idea so much.
I agree. So is it that you just kind of like, I guess, jump in and like you schedule these one-to-ones with somebody and they're all in there, like in the space that you want to be in? And how, I'm curious, how does it work?
It's a great question. I can't say I know all the details they're pushing out beta. This was last week. They were pushing out beta to 100 new patrons each Monday. So this Monday they'll have 100 new people. And I don't know if they're matching you or if you can like list your preferences, but it looks like a list of people you might meet. It looks like it might be generated for you from the way I can tell. I don't know until I kind of can get my hands in and check it out. But I will say, I mean, I met Matt through Twitter. Matt, literally, he and I were messaging back and forth on Twitter, adding each other, and we ended up grabbing coffee, and then look where we are now.
I remember that conversation because you were the only person in OKC that used Webflow. And then I remember you tweeted me, and you were like, you're another Webflow user in OKC too? And we hit it off from there.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, that's how I met the two of you, was through
right.
Twitter.
True. That's true.
That's facts. I was going to say, then that's how we connected with Lacey.
You know, we try to be normal, you know, people.
Yeah, that's fact. And it's how we got connected. So it's a cool thing. Go check it out. If you've been looking to find other people in the no-code space, tech space, what have you, to connect with and have conversations with, I think they have a good broad spectrum of people there for you to connect with. So definitely check it out. Something I've been seeing all over my Twitter timeline is Banner Bear. Somebody who listens to this podcast and somebody who we've had on this podcast, Parker Thompson, who is an incredible person. He tweeted, so not only is Banner Bear HQ an amazing tool, I just got a highly detailed support email response in less than 15 minutes from the founder on a Saturday night. I'm sold. Thanks for the product and for the help. And it looks like a very cool product. And so this is something that I've kind of tossed around. In fact, when I saw Banner Bear, my first reaction was, I wonder if I could do this with the Figma API. And, you know, like, I'm just the no-coder in me is like, how can I generate this? Like, do something like this myself. And unfortunately, you know, unless I'm going to create a plugin, Figma won't let me do it. But I can pull, like, you could do it based on categories. In fact, we talked about maybe doing like a cool tutorial where you could use your Figma board to get an OG image based on whatever category it might be. But this is really cool because you can integrate it with Twitter, and like somebody mentions you, you pass this cool text and it creates a really great looking image that you can build and design, and then it passes it back to you so you can have it to use. I mean, the one thing that I think this is a highly valuable tool. The one thing that I saw though is like, I think the starting price is $39 a month. And to me, it was like an initial sticker shock where I was like, whoa, because I was thinking, okay, I think that limits you to 1,000 images a month. And I was thinking, okay, I would totally love to use this, but I don't know if I would use 1,000 images a month up front. And it feels like a lot. Then they have pay-as-you-go pricing where you start with $50 to get 1,000 images. I don't know. Thoughts, Matt and Lacey, about this tool? It looks really cool. I should really dive in more before I start talking about it, I guess. But the pricing part is the what hit me.
No, yeah. I think for large teams, this won't be any issue. But if I'm someone that is just starting out and I surpass my 100 free images a month, you know, it is kind of prohibitive. Let's say I have like 2 blog posts a month. You know, I don't know if it's worth it for me to try to pay for Banner Bear and automate that when I could just save the 40 and do it myself. But that said, like, I get it. Like, anyone that's an independent creator deserves to, you know, they can charge whatever they want for their software, and they have every right to do so, and they should. And I'm sure he's got a ton of customers. But yeah, I think it might be just be a little prohibitive for smaller teams. But I mean, they've got a pay-as-you-go plan as well. So, you know, you can pay $49 one time, you get 1,000 images. So that works as well.
That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think I'm thinking about like in the shoes of, like, let's say a small team, a small business wants to generate more content. They don't have designers. They don't have anyone that could like really kind of help them out with this. And if they can get a good looking image that's going out there, and, you know, they're not having to mess with it constantly. You know, $39 a month isn't bad. It is. I think it's interesting because, like, you know, that's, I'm trying to think of other like cost, other tools and stuff that, you know, what their pricing is. But I think for like independent people, like one man shows, I don't know. I'm just, it would be interesting like to use, but I don't, right. I mean, 1,000 images. I don't know. I mean, if you're putting out that much content, then that's.
I can see both sides. Like, for instance,
yeah,
you brought up a great point. Like, as a small business, I could pay $250, $500, $1,000 for a designer to, like, pre-build some things, hand them off to a content team who might mess it up when they're trying to create images because, you know, that happens. Like, they're trying to work with a template. They end up messing it up. And I put this large investment in it. So from that side of it, it's, like, super valuable. But then I also compare it to something like Webflow. And I think about what you pay a month for Webflow and what you can do with that versus this, and then you go, well, so I can see both sides, and it's something that regardless I'm probably going to end up grabbing for a month or two and trying it out, just because I think it's I will say this, the people who have posted about it have been so impressed by the service and by the support that it's hard to deny, you know, how good a tool
and that
is.
Could be
so,
a big that's yeah. like that in itself could be a huge value prop. You know, we talk about this all the time. I say this all the time, like, to me, a product is only as good as, you know, its customer service. There are exceptions, but like, I love it when there are SaaS companies that are just backed by great service. And if it's a founder responding, like, even cooler, just like someone that actually, like, you know, cares about the whole customer experience. So, and it sounds like from Parker's experience and from everyone else I've seen on Twitter, it sounds like, you know, that's what's going on. Like, the founder really cares.
No, that's true. And I will say the other thing about it too is like, when I'm looking, I don't know about you, but like when I'm looking at a product and I'm trying to decide what I'm interested in or if I want to use it, one of the things that I look at is how do people talk about it, like on social media, or how do people talk about it, you know, when they're mentioning the tool? Because if you look at a tool that looks pretty good, but then you look at social media and you're like, reception is lukewarm, you know, and it's, you kind of start second guessing it. But when you're looking at a tool and you see the kind of love that they're getting from their customers, that's pretty amazing too. So, so for sure, if you're interested, go check it out. Banner Bear. We'll have a link in the show description as usual. Swipefiles.co is officially open for beta. And I think this came out of No Code Rumble. It was one of the products that came out of that. But basically, it's detailed teardowns of practical marketing examples. So essentially, it's a membership site where you pay X amount a month for access. And I forget what the price is, but I think it's $29 a month, or you can go $99 for a year, or you can go, I think it's $300 for a lifetime. But essentially, you're able to get access to all these different breakdowns of how teams are marketing. You know, what does that look like? Why is it effective? This is a really cool product. And I was super, super stoked to see this, because I think one thing that, everybody talks about in this space a lot is the fact that you can just go build and you can do whatever you want, which is true. I love it. But I think sometimes where I see, I myself have struggled with this. It's like, oh, now I need copywriting to tell the story about what I built. That part's hard. And trying to activate users can sometimes be difficult, and try to figure out how to convert them and get them across over the finish line. And I think having a tool or an access to some materials to see how other companies are doing it and doing it successfully can be super helpful for us as makers and creators and people who are looking to launch our own products. So definitely go check it out. Link in the show description as usual. Calling all women who are building with Bubble. Vivian Chen, she posted on Twitter, and it looks like she's a content creator for Bubble. And she said, calling all female women identified Bubble users, no coders. Digital accessibility is even more important now than ever, and I want to hear from you about how the no-code movement can help promote, support you as a startup founder, tech learner, etc. DM me to Diversify Tech. I loved this tweet. I don't really have a comment about it, except I think it's unbelievably amazing. And if this is you, please do not hesitate to reach out to Vivian. Link in the show notes for how you can get in touch with her. Tom Osman had a tweet thread that I thought was pretty interesting. He posted about how there's a huge opportunity for personal websites that traditionally only the finished product is shown, you know, a blog post, an essay. Why not show what went into it? So it's essentially almost, it's content about how the content was made. It's a case study on the site that has all the case studies. And I think this is interesting. A lot of people will share their finished product, and they might share a glimpse at how I got there, like what tools they're using or what integrations they might be, you know, using as a part of their site. But there isn't a lot of, unless somebody writes a case study. For instance, I've built quite a few things. If you look at my site, I think I have 4 case studies there. So, the more we can do to, I think he talks about pull back the curtain and give people more information, the more we can learn from each other. I thought it was a really interesting Twitter thread, and some great thoughts from Tom. So if you're interested in checking that out, hit the link in the show description and go chime in on the conversation, but really cool. Webflow. Nested collections are finally here. Oh my gosh. You all have no idea how excited I am. You know, if you ever used Webflow before for specific issues, like even for OK, we would have takeout type or service type or all these different pieces, and you have to lay out every tile option. Then you have conditional visibility on if it contains this, then show it. If it doesn't, don't, all these different pieces. Now you can just put a list in a list and then display all the ones that are present. Just makes your life a little bit easier. Super stoked about this feature.
Yeah, I am too. And this isn't in the notes, and I don't think I even told Ben and Matt this yet, but so you'll be hearing this on a Tuesday, and then we're also putting out a video on the same day using the nested collections and adding JetBoost with it so that you can filter through all of that, because it works out of the box and it's super fast, so easy. So be sure to look out for that too.
Yeah, I think this is super sweet. I think, so the one thing I've been getting in my inbox, both on Twitter and email, is giving an example of it. And so, Ben, what would you say is the best way to give an example? Is it like, you know, showing an author's name and image within like a blog post card? Like, what's the best way to contextualize this?
So I think the easiest way to do this, like, let's say you were running a blog, okay, and you had categories for that blog, and it was multi-reference field. And each blog post might be two or three different categories each time. But let's say total, you had 20 categories, okay? What you would have to do when you're listing your blog post in collection, you would have to have 20 tiles laid out there, and you would have to add in each category, and then you would use conditional visibility to show and hide all 20 items on whether they existed there. And then if you add a new category to your categories collection, you would have to go into your layout and add a new pill or a new tile, put in the name, and then add in the conditional visibility. So it was kind of a pain in the rear end. And you could do this on collection pages, template pages, but you couldn't do it on static pages. And now you can. Now there are some limitations to start. So you can only have one nested collection in a collection. So you can't have collection inside a collection inside a collection.
Gotcha. So there is a one child limit.
Yes. And you can only have one in the list to start. So, and the limitation is 5 items per list. So let's say you had a blog post and you were doing that. And then the categories, there were 10 categories you wanted to add. Only 5 of them are going to show because you're limited to 5.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Huh. So the reason behind that is performance. Like, let's say, you know, a collection item is limited to 100 items and you have 100 items, and then each one of those items has 5 items. Like, the numbers quickly skyrocket, and trying to just make sure everything stays performant. But super cool. Awesome to see this come out. I'm excited to see how people use it. I've already started using it. So in love with this.
The one thing I do love about Webflow, amongst other things, is that with each feature release, they put out an amazing like education piece to go with it. So we'll be sure to link that below. They like built a list of Taco Bell locations or something like that. And I loved the example, and anything that McGuire puts out is amazing. So we'll link to that below if you want to learn more about nested collections.
Run for the border. Props to the Webflow education team, because that's really cool stuff. Shippo, also from Webflow. Webflow announced a Shippo integration. So if you're somebody who's been using Webflow e-commerce and you have been wanting to use, you know, a shipping label, a shipping integration of some sort, I know some people have been trying to get this going, and they've been using like Integromat and chaining tools together. Now it's just a native integration with Shippo, which is really cool. What's really great is if you use Shippo when you buy a label or what have you, it automatically goes back and updates the order status in Webflow, which will notify the customer, let them know like, hey, it's been fulfilled. Here's your tracking number, yada, 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 which is really cool. This is super awesome. And the Shippo team has been incredible. In fact, they tweeted, we're launching a new partnership with Webflow today, allowing Webflow users to have seamless access to shipping tools. And we've been at Webflow, they've been doing some work to really try to help businesses in the midst of COVID. And Shippo is also doing something to help people who are starting up e-commerce businesses. So if you got some e-commerce hosting deals with Webflow to get started, you can also get that same sort of deal with Shippo, which is really cool. So just a super cool integration. I'm glad to see it out in the wild.
Two things here. One, I will say this with every Webflow e-commerce update, I'm super pumped about it because it just makes it one step closer to being like a really, really great Shopify alternative. But two, like if you're running an e-commerce store, like, and if you run an e-commerce store at scale, you know how complex order fulfillment can be. And like you said, like with the way you had to do it before with Integromat and catching webhooks and things like that, like it just wasn't great. But like, I'm so excited about this integration because Shippo makes things really easy. You can build branded landing pages, and yeah, they have a whole like COVID-19 relief policy. I think Shippo is free right now for up to like 5,000 orders. We'll link to their pricing page and their website below, but so pumped about this.
the other team is wonderful and super cool, super excited to see this integrated into Webflow. I think it's going to be really, really huge for Webflow customers. So awesome stuff. Also, Webflow has been doing their coffee talks on Thursdays. And this week it's Jason Green and the West Forth Creative Team out of Nashville, Tennessee. So make sure you go check that out and make sure you register and you're looking for that and joining in on those, because they've been super great. It's a great way to connect with other people and to learn. And so definitely something to look into. Mackenzie Child, again, it's like Mackenzie. Every week he's slowly taking over the glide up, the weekly updates, which is funny. But he announced something called Flowmingo. And I like saying that even, Flowmingo. And Flowmingo, if you've absolutely followed me, if you followed me for a while, you may notice that I absolutely love Webflow. So he's been wanting to create something focused around Webflow, and he's starting Flowmingo, which is a Webflow-only job board and education site. If you haven't seen this, go look. The illustrations are unbelievable. Looks so good.
How cute is this? I mean, maybe y'all wouldn't say cute, but like it is. I love this site so much. The illustrations are so, so good. I'm just like, oh my gosh, I wish he, like, in addition to doing, like, he's doing education on Webflow and stuff, it's like, I want to see him do some, put out some stuff of how to create illustrations like this, because he's so talented.
Yes. And this style, I know you've posted about this before, like, kind of inspired by Roji, and when he posted the Telly, I think the template was, that was it, or maybe it was the Mac-focused one. But, really pulling in that style, but like the design is just so incredible, and the work here is unreal. I just love it. Like, I kept coming back to this tweet just to pull up this image and look at it, and I kept hitting the page just to look. And so if Mackenzie, if you're listening to this and you're wondering who is that one IP address that just keeps hitting your site over, and it's probably me. Like, I just keep going back to look at that illustration. I think it's so good. So well done. Your content at all is always great. So we know this is going to be amazing, and looking forward to seeing what comes out of this. So definitely excited. Drew Thomas was posting about Builder. And so he was excited to show off the new Builder HQ website, is what he tweeted. And then he posted a thread for context. So essentially, Builder has been using their own tool. They've been using Builder to build Builder. And they also used Builder to build the Builder website. Now, that is a tongue twister. And if you can say it 10 times fast, then you're better than me, because that is a lot of builders and building and, I don't know. The arsonist has oddly shaped feet, right? Like, I don't know, whatever your tongue twister is. So, super cool. It kind of reminded me of Clutch. I know it's something we've mentioned a little bit, like using a tool to build a tool. So it really, really interesting tweet thread or Twitter thread. And I haven't had access to Builder. I don't think there's a lot like a widespread access to the tool yet, but it looks interesting. I did see Raymar tweet about how he was getting access and how he expected to not sleep for the next month. So, which is super interesting. I'll be excited to hear what people have to say about Builder, because I'm curious myself. Coda. Doc galleries are here. So they have a new home for your docs. They rebuilt the doc gallery where you can explore and share what you've made. You can self-publish, discover docs, create and curate your own collection. It's really, really cool. Wade Foster of Zapier posted about some of their distributed team templates being available there, which is really amazing. Matt, do you want to talk about the tweet you sent from Patrick O'Shaughnessy, about how he spoke with Shashir about Coda's name? You want to chime in here?
Yes. Okay. This goes back to our never-ending conversation about whether Coda is a doc tool or a spreadsheet or an app or whatever it wants to be. But I thought this was wild. Patrick, I guess, spoke with Shashir from Coda, and Coda, spelled backwards, is a doc. And so maybe Ben is wrong here.
Oh my gosh.
I sent this to the group, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I was mind blown when I saw that.
Oh my gosh. I didn't even.
I clearly. All right. You know what? Lacey's obviously not reading my messages.
You know, what's funny is I talked to somebody at the CODA team, and they told me that when we had our spreadsheet episode that they were debating our takes, and it made me laugh because, you know, they would not necessarily classify themselves, I guess, as a spreadsheet tool all the time either, but you can build spreadsheets inside of it. So it's everything. It's all encompassing. You can build docs. You have access to that data. It's pretty funny. It's funny. And so I enjoyed that conversation. Shout out to John because he's such a cool guy. Anyway, moving on. Also from CODA, they have a virtual meetup. So, you know, a lot of companies like this have meetups around the world. You know, Webflow has a lot of meetups. And in fact, webflow.com/community. But what I love about Webflow's meetups recently and CODA's meetups, since we're kind of all self-quarantining and we can't really go anywhere, they're making them virtual, which means even though it's a New York City meetup, you can attend. So if you're interested in CODA and learning more and just hearing from the Earnest research team, you definitely need to go register. We have a link in the show description. Thanks, Colleen, for tweeting about this and helping me see this. Really, really cool. No Coterie, which we've talked about one or two times, talked about their initial release, and then they had version 2.0, which came out and launched on Product Hunt. Now they're actually launching some education pieces around Glide, which is really cool. So if you are looking to learn Glide or get started, this is a great place to go get your feet wet and try to learn the basics. Super cool and strong work from the No Coterie team. Super happy for you about this launch. This is really neat. So Matt and I tend to get into conversations that are really fun from time to time. And so
by fun, you mean very heated and very divisive?
No, always in a friendly way. Always in a friendly way. And,
for sure.
And Anthony, Anthony G, at Anthony G on Twitter, he posted a website this week, thebigbed.webflow.io. And if you haven't seen it, oh my gosh, it is absolutely incredible. It is a storybook that you can play through. It'll play the audio files. It highlights as it reads. The animations are incredible. The whole implementation is unreal. And so Matt and I were talking. He was like, well, what's your, because I said I really like this site. I said it might be my new favorite Webflow website ever, just hands down. I think it's one of the coolest pieces. And then we got into an argument about our top 5 or 10 Webflow websites. But this is a really cool project. And I got to say props to Anthony because this is incredible. And we actually are hoping to have him come on the show soon to talk about how he built it and what it looks like to do something like this. This is such a cool build.
Yeah, I think this is in my top 10, if not my top 5. The reason we talked about this isn't on our notes, but that Good Books project that we shared, I honestly loved that site, both the design and the data. I think it was so well done. So we'll link to that as well. But Anthony crushed it on this website. I mean, this is like showing the true potential of, you know, interactions and like building badass websites on Webflow. So props, Anthony. We will have you on soon. And we are super excited about it.
Yeah, it's really cool. The Good Books IO site we had a disagreement about just because I'm a self-proclaimed word nerd and
you're something just, all right.
Yeah, that's true. And so anytime I see a book site and it's like, hey, here's a list of curated books, I'm like, I don't know. I feel like I've seen this same list of books before somewhere. So
it just doesn't
seem different to me. But the design, unbelievable.
Okay, so to me, the data here is almost cooler to me than the design. Ben and I disagree on that. Ben says he could, you know, Google this and get the books. I think that's probably true. That's probably how this data was compiled. But I like the fact that I have a simple place to have all of my books or all these book recommendations from all these cool people I like Patrick Carlson or Vlad or Brian or things like that. And so I don't know. I thought it was a cool site, but we did have a disagreement on where this landed in Ben's top websites. He likes it, but I don't know if Ben's seen a lot of really cool Webflow sites.
Well, the cool part about working at Webflow customer support is you just see a lot of, you see a lot of sites. I mean, you know, people send in looking for help and you open up a site and you're like, whoa, I've never heard of this. I've never seen it. GetBooks is a really cool site. Like the design is unbelievable, but I don't know. At this point, I've given up on book curation sites and lists because I don't think that there's an original one out there. It's just, you know, it feels like a lot of the data is replicated everywhere you go. But we're way off track now. this was not even in the outline. So here we go. Max Katz, he posted about a really cool Parabola build, which was, he said, just built a no-code app using Parabola with IBM Watson and Twilio. This looks absolutely incredible. I would love to tap into IBM Watson to do some no-code flows or pull some data. Seems like such a cool piece. I do know Max works for IBM. I think it's really cool to see him using no-code to build products and pieces like this. It's really, really top-notch. Excited. Hopefully he posts more about that. Speaking of Parabola, they have another design tweak, another change. So now whenever you... It used to be you had your flows, and as soon as you went to had your flows, you'd go straight into your editor. And now they switched it where you kind of go into a dashboard and you see attempts and different pieces and all that fun stuff, which is really cool. But now when you see your flows, they also have all the icons of all the apps that are involved, which is awesome. Gives you a, you know, one of the things I love about Zapier or Integromat is the ability to, you know, quickly log in and see, like, just with the iconography, what each Zap is doing, what each scenario is doing. This kind of gives you that same ability in Parabola, which is really cool. So strong work to the Parabola team. I really loved this. And they also have a blog post about how April has been really busy. They have been rolling out a lot of stuff. And so if you want to see what's new with Parabola, you can go check out that blog post to see what's new with Parabola. Some of the things that they talk about is the native Webflow integration, cleaning up the sidebar, you know, File Explorer for Google Sheets, and the Flows page redesigned. And they also have their first educational video series that was launched. They have more coming soon. So if you were looking to learn Parabola, now is the time to jump in with 2 feet and really get going and start building some awesome stuff with it, because it's such a great tool. All right, and that is it for our no-code roundup. Matt, Lacey, did I forget anything? Because I always feel like when I get to the end of this, I forget something. And it feels like every week we post this, and yes, as soon as we post it, exactly, somebody will announce something new.
5 minutes after we stop recording, Glide's going to launch some update.
It always happens.
That's what I was just thinking. Is like, I don't think we missed anything, but I think by the time this comes out, there will be something else.
There always is. There always is. So this episode has been a lot of fun. Enjoy this no code roundup. Hope you enjoyed it like we did, and enjoy this interview and conversation with Tara Reed. And then we'll see you next week.
Deuce.
Welcome everybody to the Visual Dev FM podcast. I am so excited with our guest today. We have Tara Reed from Apps Without Code joining us, and we are going to talk all about Apps Without Code, how Tara got started, and we're just so excited for her to be here. So thank you so much for joining us, Tara.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So can you tell us like how you got started in tech? Because you didn't like get started in programming or anything, right? It was like a different kind of role.
Yeah, so I got started in business in tech. So my first foot in the door in tech came while I was in college. So I went to a school where the whole strategy everybody was going after was to be in consulting or finance, right? That was the plan. And so I assumed that I was going to be in one of those two fields. And so when my junior year came around, I had been looking at sort of a hybrid of the two. I'd been looking at like consulting, in-house consulting teams in finance. And I had accepted an offer at JP Morgan for my summer internship. And then last minute, I got an offer in for an internship at Google, which I had applied to totally on a whim. It was like, why not? I don't know anything about tech, but I'll try. And I ended up getting that internship offer and was like, okay, never mind, JP Morgan. I take my acceptance letter back. I rescind my offer. I'm going to go do this tech thing in the Bay Area and just check it out and see. So that was my foot in the door. It was pretty cool experience being at Google. I worked on a in-house, kind of like an in-house startup team called Google Offers. Essentially, Google had tried to buy Groupon and the deal didn't go through. And so they were like, we're going to build our own. And so Google Offers emerged as Google's like response to Groupon, which no longer exists anymore. But it was really fun. And I got to learn a ton about tech and about what I liked about the industry.
Very cool. Very cool. So, and so you were at Google, and then what was your step after Google? Did you go straight into your startup?
No. Okay. So I did a pretty quick stint. I worked at Google, and then I worked at Foursquare for about a year. And then I went over to Microsoft and worked on Microsoft Windows team for a few years. And while I was working at Microsoft, I had this idea for a side project. So I wasn't trying to launch a company at the time. I was really trying to launch a side project. I was really frustrated at Microsoft. Like, that was not the best fit for roles for me. And mainly the reason I was frustrated was because there was just a lot of politics going on, and I just wanted to work on great products. And instead, I felt like my team and my managers were really focused about on like stealing each other's budgets and operating budgets. And so I wanted to... Really, like, me starting my first company, Collecto, started from me wanting to launch a side project that would give me creative control over something where I felt like I kind of lost it at work.
Can you talk about Collecto? Because I looked into it. It's built on Bubble, right? And it's based around, you know, art, buying and selling art, right?
Yeah. So Collecto's had a few different evolutions. I'll tell you about how it started. I at the time was thinking about artwork, and I wanted to buy artwork from my home on a budget. And I was trying to find resources to help me do that. And it turns out that if you want to have someone help you find art, like get an art advisor, which is kind of like a personal stylist for your walls, right? If you want to do that, then you need to have a budget of at least $10,000 and up, because the way that art advisors work is it's kind of like real estate. So they take a commission on what they sell you. And so if you buy a $100 piece of artwork, it's just not worth the commission for them. So I really started with this idea of wanting to take art advisory and make it accessible to people. And so what I did, and it didn't really start as a tech project, actually. I was just using pieces of technology to put it together. And so there are a couple different iterations of this. So the first thing that I did was probably within 3 days of coming up with the idea, I reached out on LinkedIn to a bunch of people who had the job description of art advisor. And I reached out to some of them, told them a little bit about my project and this idea that I had. I wanted to help people find affordable artwork. I went to coffee with a few of them and found one that I really hit it off with. Her name was Emily Havens. And she became my chief art advisor. And then I started doing a little bit of marketing. We posted, I just created like a really ugly website that said, become an art collector, get a personal stylist for your walls. On that website, I opened up my phone and I wrote an email to myself pretending to be like an art advisor. So it's like, hey, this is Emily. I have some artwork for you to check out. Here's the link. And I took a screenshot of the email and put it on the website, like a, you know, like a phone product, to give people a sense of like how it might work, with a sign up button that connected to a type form. Like, that was the website that we put together. And then I started posting it places. I posted it. I actually initially started going on LinkedIn, and you know, on LinkedIn at the bottom where it says like what people's interests are, like extracurricular interests, a lot of people have museums and art collecting. So I would message people who had those interests and say, hey, I'm working on this project to help people find artwork. If any interest, here's the link. So I was doing this sort of like guerrilla marketing, trying to find people who were interested in cobbling this together, but it came together pretty quickly. I know that a lot of times people who have ideas, they spend a lot of time pondering on it before they get started with anything. That was not my approach. It was like, what can I grab of tools that I can use to put together and start getting interest? So that was like the very early first few weeks of that process.
Wow. That's really impressive. That's very cool. So you, I mean, like you were doing no code before it was no code, you know, like stitching things together.
Yeah. No code didn't exist as a movement at the time. Cause this was 2014. This was 2014, 2015. So what I did first, there were kind of two main iterations of the product itself and how it was like visual programming and no code. So the first iteration of it, I used a survey. I think it was Survey Gizmo that I used. And I don't know if you know this, like surveys have show hide logic. So like an example of this is like, I don't know, it's like, what's your favorite color? And you say purple, and then it'll hide the questions about the follow-up question about blue and show you the follow-up question about purple, right? So I used that function on Survey Gizmo. So what I did was I loaded up a bunch of art recommendations. And then people had told me on their survey what they liked and didn't like. So if you liked photography, it would show all the photography and hide everything else. Or if you liked photography in black and white, it would show all the black and white photography and hide everything else, right? And people would message me, and it kind of said it customized, it put a URL parameter with people's names and their preferences. So people go like, oh my gosh, I loved your app. It's so great. I saw my recommendations. They're wonderful. And all I'd done was hack together a survey to show and hide recommendations. So that was V1 of putting that together. This was before a lot of the tools that I use now even existed.
For sure. So is that kind of where Apps Without Code was like born out of this, like you walking through this business process and putting this together and seeing how quickly you could build something, iterate on ideas and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I could probably trace it back a little bit further in terms of my interest in it. I could probably trace it all the way back to my internship at Google, where I built this interactive dashboard in Excel, because like those skill sets, they all kind of build upon each other. It's really just like a scrappiness that you apply to this. But yes, that was the first time that I built a product. And with that survey that we hacked together, I did $35,000 in sales, and also took those results that we had done to 500 startups and got a $100K investment from 500 startups and got accepted to their accelerator. So that was where I was like, oh wait, I think this is a thing that we can move with. I distinctly remember my interview at 500 Startups, where they asked me, we were kind of talking about the traction and what was going well. And then they got to the part where they asked me about my technical team and who had built the app and the product and all this stuff. At the time, it wasn't an app. At the time, I think it still was that survey. And I walked them through how I built it, how I hacked some tools together and used Zapier in the back end and all these things. And I remember they looked at each other, because it was like me and three other people. And they looked at each other and kind of nodded their heads at each other, because it was clear that this person was going to get this thing built and figured out no matter what. We can help her with the rest, but like she's going to get this going. She's going to figure out a way. So I think it actually helped me, and that it showed scrappiness.
Yeah, for sure. So what no-code tools do you use now to like build with or teach with, or you teach your students?
Yeah, so there are five different tools that I teach now. So, and actually I'll go back really quickly and share that after I built that sort of hacked together tool, we then moved over to Bubble and built the rest of the product in Bubble. But I actually, when I started After That Code Bootcamp and the program that I run now, it came from, I did a TEDx talk in Detroit, and so many people were interested in like, oh my gosh, I'm non-technical, I have an idea for an app too, can you teach me? And at the time I was like, no, I can't, because I'm trying to run my own company. And I got so many emails that I was like, wait a minute, I have to figure out a way to help people. So I decided to help five people. I immediately sold out of those five seats. And then I increased the price a little bit after I'd helped those people. They got their apps launched. I increased the price and had 70 people. So that's kind of how Apps Without Code as a coaching program emerged. But to go back to what tools I use, when we first started, we taught Bubble. We now teach five different tools based on what you're trying to build. So the first tool that we built, that we teach, is called ShareTribe. Have you guys used ShareTribe before? Yeah, so we're creating marketplaces. So it's like if you want to create like an Airbnb style app, it's really good for that. So ShareTribe is the first tool that we teach, depending on what you're trying to build. The second tool that we teach is Mighty Networks. So if you're building a social network app, folks use Mighty Networks. The third app that we teach, or third platform that we teach, is either Teachable or Thinkific, mainly Thinkific for people who are building education platforms. The fourth one is called Cloud Match. It's actually one that we built in-house, and it's for people who are building like recommendation engines and almost like Tinder style matching apps. And the reason we built that is just we didn't see a good option for that, an easy option for that out there without building it completely from scratch. So we built that in-house. And then the fifth tool that we build, which is kind of more of the general software, is Glide. Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, we're huge Glide fans over here. We cannot stop raving about them. And there are so many tools out right now. I mean, it's like overwhelming how many tools and how like they do their product releases and just all the time we struggle to keep up. And I mean, we can't possibly keep up with all of them.
Yeah, but yes.
It is so much. It's so much. So what are your favorite tools? Like, yeah. Do you do any?
My favorite tools are kind of controversial because here's why. I think that there's a big divide in the no-code space of tools that are pretty open-ended and they are made for someone who already knows how to think like a developer. So like I would put Bubble in that category. I would even put a little bit Glide in that category. Like you kind of need to know how spreadsheet databases get structured. You're gonna have to already come with that insight. And not everybody comes in with that knowledge, right? If you, for your job, your 9-to-5, you don't do much with spreadsheets or you don't do much with databases, you don't do much with if-then logic, it's a little bit difficult. I would say that my favorite no-code tool is actually a really simple one. I would say Mighty Networks is actually my favorite tool. I think that they've created a niche. They're not trying to be for like all types of apps. They're like, if you're building a social network app without code, come here. And I think they've done a phenomenal job just making it super simple. So I actually like the simpler of the no-code apps, particularly for teaching. The challenge for us becomes we have to teach people how to know which tool to use in which scenario. And we've created these like workbooks for figuring that out. But I actually really like, I would say Mighty Networks is my favorite. And I'd probably say like Glide is my second.
Okay. Yeah. I haven't checked out Mighty Networks. Well, a little bit, but not much. So I'll definitely look that up. I'm interested in it. Yeah. So do you think so you said that you created your own in-house tool, Cloud Match. Was that right? Okay. So is that something that is like public for people to use or is that just for your students?
No, other people can use it too. It's at cloudmatchapp.com. So it is a tool for creating matching and recommendation apps, almost Tinder style. And you can use it for anything. So it doesn't have to be just dating. Like people use it, for example. One of the things we actually really focus on is creating really solid business models. So a lot of, like an example of one of our students, they use it to go to universities and schools and programs that match mentors with mentees, and they use it and they create and they white label it for those schools and then come out with large contracts for that. So that's an example of like how people are using Cloud Match.
Okay, awesome. Very cool. So do you use no code like you have apps without code, which is your business. Do you use like no code to run that business? You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
So do you feel like, obviously, because you're a business owner who, you know, aside from what it is, but you're using no code in your business. And do you feel like it obviously helps you like scale faster or like what upsides do you see from using no code solutions?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So I think one of the challenges that I have had in building my own companies, and I know that other people run into this for sure, is like the ability to communicate to a developer what exactly you need. Like that, I think that's hard for most people. I think most people feel like something got lost in communication somewhere. But I've been running businesses now, online businesses, for 5-6 years now, and we've never written any code for any of them. My companies do over $1 million in revenue a year. There's no code insight. Maybe like, I don't know, I can, my coding ability is like, I can change my hex code color in my HTML. That's the limit, right? So maybe with the exception of like grabbing a code snippet and plugging it somewhere and like not even knowing what it really does, that's the limit of what we do in all of my businesses. And so I think what it's allowed us to do is like create a whole online business, a whole tech business, multiple of them really, without any code, without that being a limitation.
That's phenomenal. That's phenomenal. So what would you say to people? Like, I know that there are naysayers in the no code space who are like, it's not real, it's drag and drop, it's, you know, all sorts of stuff. What do you have to say to people that kind of like diss no code and have problems with it? Usually developers, but not always.
Usually developers. It's so funny. I love looking at the comments on my TED Talk because there's so many developer haters that are in there. I think what we have to remember is that at the end of the day, particularly if you're using no code for entrepreneurship, we have to remember the goal of early stage entrepreneurship. The goal is not to build the world's fanciest product. I think that's where we get confused. So even if there are things that no code can't do yet, right? Like there are some things we can't do without code. Even if there are things that no code can't do yet, even if we feel like it would be quote unquote better to write with code, the goal of early stage entrepreneurship is speed and to get something in front of customers and to see if they want it early, right? So in that sense, no code comes in as the hero. And I find so many super open-minded developers who are like, I love this because it allows me to test out my idea before I spend all of the energy and crank up all this technical debt that I didn't need. Right. So I do think that I agree with you. There are some naysayers about no code, but I think particularly when we're using it for entrepreneurship, you have to remember what the goal of early stage entrepreneurship is. And it fits perfectly in that, get something to market fast.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. So with your students, do they, when they are enrolled in your class, is it difficult to teach them about no code, like in a way, or is there like pushback from them as far as like, you know, here's how we're going to build your solution with one of these platforms?
None.
Is there any, yeah, that's awesome.
The more someone is entrenched in the industry and the way that they think tech has to go, the less open-minded they often are to no code. The folks that I work with, though, they're not developers. They're coming in with some industry expertise, and they're realizing that the tech industry is not spending enough attention on a problem that they know about. So they work in healthcare, they work in education, they work in manufacturing, and they realize that, like, wait a minute, there's a gap. Like, there's a... I'll give you a couple examples of the stuff that my students are working on. There's a alumni of my program who works with schools. So what he does is he teaches music programs. He teaches young people how to read and write and produce music. And so schools will often have him come out to their school to do after school program and programming in his school, in their schools. But he can only be in so many places at once. And so he built a app that has, like, you put in, you can kind of mix songs and put songs together. There's homework assignments for different instruments, and you get, you know, it's gamified a little bit, and the teachers can go in and put in grades. And he's created this whole system, and he's white labeled it to 23 schools in Virginia who have had their budgets cut for their arts and education programs, but this is a way that they can continue it. And it's a way for him to scale his business. Like, that's an example of a place where traditional tech is not jumping at creating that solution, but he saw a really big gap and he found a way to fill it. I have so many cool stories like that of things, often things that we don't think of as like sexy tech startups that are really important for people in their roles.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. So where do you see the no code space going in like 1 to 3 years? Cause it, I feel like it has grown. So I heard your talk at No Code Conf in San Francisco. I was there and you did great, by the way. But so, and it just seems like since then it has just so much more exposure. It's gotten so much more exposure. I don't know, like No Code Twitter has blown up. What do you think that, you know, we can might see in the future?
I can share what I would like to see. What I would like to see is actually, well, I'll tell you what I think we'll see. Both. I think we'll see is a wave of no-code movement that I think that'll continue. And we'll see things like no-code Twitter continue to be bigger. But I think we're going to hit a critical point, if we're doing this right, we're going to hit a critical point where the concept of something being no-code is completely irrelevant, right? Like, it's just going to be created. So, for example, we're not in the same way. Like, we've gone through this wave with websites where it was, like, really clear at a point where websites had to be made with code. Now we've got, like, Webflow, we've got Squarespace, we've got WordPress, we've got all these tools where people know that it's accessible to build a website. And we have to say no code less in those scenarios. I think that we're going to see that continue. So I think that what that's going to mean is that we're going to expand outside of no-code Twitter, which, if we're being frank, is all of the industry insiders, right? Like, no-code Twitter is a nice bubble of just industry insiders. We're going to see people who are just like, oh, I watched Shark Tank, I have an app idea, and I put it together. They're not even going to say no-code. It's not even going to, like, occur to them to even say it that way.
One of the things that we talk about a lot is related to the lines of, like, do we call it no code? Is that even a good name for it? And, like, that's kind of why we try to call it visual development, because I think you're 100% right. Like, I think we're going to start getting away from that, and people are just going to start realizing that, like, this is the move, this is the wave. And like you said, this is, like, over the years, it's just been abstracted and abstracted and abstracted. And now we have Webflow and Squarespace and all that. What do you think about the term no code? Is it a good fitting term for the space, or should we be collectively changing it?
I think we need to collectively change it. I think that, like, because it's caught on, we should use it. That doesn't mean that I love the term, though. And that's me saying this with, like, the name of my company is Apps Without Code. So even still, like, I still think that no code, Apps Without Code, all of those, even a little bit, like, visual development assumes that you know that it previously wasn't visual. Like, there's so much built into what we're calling it, where it's like a contrast. The name is like a contrast to what it was. I would maybe love, I haven't thought about this before, I'm like literally thinking of ideas off the top of my head, but it's something like easy app development, or simple app development, or fast app development, like something else that describes it, what it is, as opposed to describes what it's not.
Sure. I think it used to, or someone, when we were having these conversations on Twitter, someone mentioned that, like, back in the day, it used to be called, like, rapid app development, RAD, or something like that. and so maybe we should just go back to RAD. Maybe that's a more fitting name.
I think that what's funny about the naming conversation is, like, all of us, even if we don't code, are, like, relatively technical. And so we're having this very technical conversation about marketing, where what you call the movement is the marketing conversation. And I think what we need to do then is, like, put on our marketing hats. We need to go ask the people who don't know anything about no code and aren't in the industry what they would call it, and figure out what resonates with them if we want this to expand beyond the insiders who are in the space.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I think that's a really interesting idea. That would be fun, like a little experiment to try. So we so want to honor your time and thank you so much for being with us. Where can people find you and connect with you?
Yeah. Okay. So you can find me on usually Instagram or Twitter at Tara Reed, R-E-E-D underscore, Tara Reed underscore. And then also I do a free workshop on not only building apps without code, but also how to build a business around it, how to monetize your app without code. Mm-hmm. So if you want to check that out, I do it pretty regularly, but you can see the calendar of when they're coming up at workshop.appswithoutcode.com. workshop.appswithoutcode.com.
Okay, awesome. And we'll include that in the show notes too for this. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Tara, and we really appreciate it. I'm so glad we got to chat.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to visualdev.fm. You can find us on your favorite social media platform at visualdevfm.